views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
Fortunate that I have such an obsession with Vincent Price, because I want to watch all these other horror movies that we've talked about on the 31 Days of Halloween and check out new movies that are coming out. Every Halloween, there's new movies that are being released for the season. But Vincent Price's career is so full of great films that you could do a 31 Days of Vincent Price and you'd end up going into the like the Bikini Girl movies and stuff that he did.
Okay, but those are fun.
Those are fun.
And that's not even counting TV.
The 60s, 70s romp movies where there was just like Peter Sellers standing in the corner of a fucking an apartment and there's just like 60s groove music playing and girls in bikinis dancing and then there's a conversation and then it's like...
Oh yeah.
Just like that.
That reminded me of Beverly Hillbillies. The bikini girls are all sped up.
Very special episode of Beverly Hillbillies. Yeah.
Don't worry, we're going to recreate this scene so that way everyone can see like the gestures that were happening. We're going to do the GUI podcast 60s romp movie.
But it's no surprise that Vincent Price, with that fucking mustache, that iconic mustache.
The mustache and the voice.
And the voice would be in movies like that. But, I mean, thinking about... Vincent Price was there from the golden age, like the early age of horror to, I mean, through the 90s. I mean, literally like in Edward Scissorhands.
I think of him as a scream king. He's right there. You look at Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Vincent Price goes right in there. And I personally think Christopher Lee goes right in that list as well.
I put Vincent Price in the same caliber as like Christopher Lee or Peter Cushing. That level of where they weren't. Now, granted, Lee did play a lot of monsters due to Hammer. And then you mentioned Bela Lugosi and all those guys. They were iconic horror monsters. But then we had the how horror evolved after that, and we go into where we have these individuals that are just like in it for what they can bring to being creepy.
Yeah, they're not just
spooky.
Prosthetic monster.
Yeah, exactly.
Anymore,
it's the human aspect, right?
Right, and I think that's part of what's really unique about Vincent Price, and part of what his longevity is as a figure, because where you know, like, we do recognize Lugosi, and we do recognize Boris, and you know.
Chaney and
Christopher Lee and all that, but we often also associate them with a specific character. And while Vincent has a few of those, when you say Vincent Price, there's a whole like fanned out menagerie of things that could come to mind because he is iconic as Vincent Price, and I think that's part of what makes him. And I feel like there are obviously like people from this era that, you know, have carried over in that similar tradition. Like, I would say that Robert Englund is recognizable as Robert Englund.
Yes, now he is.
Now he is. Yeah.
Took a little while for that.
It took a little while, but Vincent Price also took a little while because, you know, we're talking about a man that's got over 100 films, let alone other things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Vincent Price, the thing with him, because he had been acting for so long, I guess it depends on how old you are, what you would know him from. Because my personal introduction to him was Thriller. So, I was a little kid. Thriller was my introduction to horror. And so, when I heard his voice, I thought, well, I'm terrified right now, and I'm hearing this voice. This is the voice of horror. So, it established for me immediately that this is what horror is. And Vincent Price was the beginning. It was this establishment of that in my entire life. So, yeah.
How fucking iconic do you have to be featured on not only a Michael Jackson record as like the voice of the horror that is Thriller, and also be on an Iron Maiden record?
and Alice Cooper.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the level that we're talking about on this episode. We're talking, of course, about Vincent Price. It's a far overdue episode of our Potoween season episodes where we talk all things spooky. Vincent Price is iconic in so many different ways for so many different roles that he's played over the years. Getting into those roles, we're going to be talking about the man himself, his life, and what he meant to all of us on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. All things Vincent Price. Welcome.
Buddy.
Tell me to work and shall be again. A changing of the guards, the tides marching in. You
Oi.
So welcome. Yeah, I'm super juiced to talk about this. I mean, this is tough to put into one episode, but again, a lot of the Halloween episodes tend to be that way.
Yes.
It's such a beloved genre.
We all have deep-seated Halloween issues.
Very much.
But are they issues? I don't know.
Where it's like, it's July, it's like mid-July, and I'm like, spooky season?
It's almost here.
It's not like the height of summer yet, and I'm like, spooky season?
But it's the whole thing. Like, I'm like, okay, it's July. So I technically have one more month before I'm like, all right, I know it's still hot in December relatively, but it's September. Like, I'm through the summer season. Yeah. So in July, I'm like, I got one more month.
Well, as soon as Halloween's over, I'm gonna be like, okay, what am I gonna do next Halloween?
Yep.
Yep.
What am I gonna be?
But yeah, I feel like spooky season for me is like September 1st through October 31st. Is you got two solid months of just being spooky. You're good to go.
Yeah, only 2 months. That's totally all.
No, I can spooky year round, but it's like spooky dedicated between those 2 months.
No, you got to extend that out further because you got to think about like when that HorrorCon season starts, man.
That's true.
HorrorCon season is all year round.
Yeah. And Halloween is year round.
I got you. All right.
But let's talk about our panel that is bringing the noise and the funk on this Vincent Price episode. It's been a while since we've had Fabian on, but he is here to talk all things Vincent Price.
I am so happy to be back.
Yay!
Yes.
First time in the new studio.
Yes, so I love this place. It's beautiful.
I love this studio too.
Yeah. So I've been away, I guess, because of COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID kind of shut down the world, shut down my life, certainly. And
there were definitely moments where I felt like Vincent Price in Last Man on Earth.
Yes, actually, that was...
Where I saw the people roaming the streets being like, you don't need a mask. COVID has microchips in it.
And yeah.
I was like, nope, close the curtain.
Yeah, they're all zombies now.
Yeah. But yeah, Fabian, thank you for coming back on for this episode.
It is wonderful to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
If you're unfamiliar, Fabian is a, multifaceted artist of photography, filmmaking, music. You've got... I think it's November 12th. Synthetic Nightmares doing another show.
Yes. We're going to do our first show since COVID started.
Yay.
So it's going to be interesting.
It's weird that seems like 45 years ago.
Yeah.
That before pre-COVID, but it was like only a few years ago.
Yeah.
It does make a difference.
Time gets real weird when you're stuck in your house and things that you like to do for fun are shut down.
I believe Doctor Who shit a little bit easier now.
Timey-wimey.
Timey-wimey as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but November 12th at Fallout, Synthetic Nightmare with the dude that does the
Barry
Disappointed. What is it?
Barry White Hansen.
Barry White Hansen. He does that Disappointed song that's super fucking funny.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, next up, an entertainer in their own right as well, and a co-host on Beautiful Disasters. We've got Murphy Lawless here.
Hi, friends. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. A horror nerd extraordinaire as well.
Yeah. A little bit ravenous for it. It's true.
I love in the early days of Murphy coming on would be like, I don't know if I like know enough about this thing with 14 pages of notes, like ready to roll.
I've tried to scale back. I've let myself do only one page of notes because Groots was like, Murph, we can hear your pages turning. And I was like, okay.
That's the funny thing is like the longer you do this, the less you realize how the less you worry about like doing research. Like I look over at my co-host here and me and like, we've done shit for this. Like maybe watched a movie or two tops for this.
That's actually what I was worried about. Okay. I came in here and I looked over at your notebook, your notepad there. And I'm like, oh boy, I didn't do.
This is just who I am.
I did not bring a notebook.
No. Accept it. And
I'm just going to speak from the heart and talk about Thriller.
No, that's fair. But I found a bunch of really cool stuff and it's awesome. And if you look in through the Wikipedia links, there's like a huge, like lifelong interview with him that Smithsonian did. That's super worth downloading and reading.
Sounds amazing.
So,
yeah.
I'm still working my way through it.
Would be because he's lived his career is so expansive.
Yeah.
That, I mean, to really hope to not put it all into one, you know, to cover it in a podcast
it's
going to be a lot. I mean, we could talk about this for days.
Yeah.
I mean,
honestly, it's own, like mini series of episodes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just because he has done so much. And even outside of horror, he's done so much.
That's where it gets daunting. I know him from a horror background because I'm obsessed with horror. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But knowing that he was such an artiste and so many things outside of what each of us appreciate him for.
Exactly.
It gets daunting.
He definitely was described as a Renaissance man, and I absolutely agree with that. Like,
yeah,
Vincent
definitely.
Price, 100%.
Well, he didn't pick and choose. If it was something that he saw that was interested in, he would
go for it.
He would do it.
Yep.
And that's you know.
And the gentleman that is in line with me on being like, research?
I mean, and all of us, like, I grew up with this guy.
Yeah, that's
guy,
the thing.
So
I didn't
like,
have to worry too much about this one. But like, yeah, my partner in crime here, Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everybody? Yeah. And to piggyback off of pre-intro, what Fabian said about Thriller, that was actually like the third thing for me. Like, Murph and I were talking outside earlier. My very first intro was when I went to see Edward Scissorhands in the theater, but I was also like 5
when
that movie came out. And then it was Batman 66. Because I watched the show.
Oh,
he was Egghead.
Yeah.
He was Egghead.
Yeah.
So I recognized the voice. Then I'm like, oh, hey, he was the guy. Because he's way older than Edward Scissorhands, right? We're talking 30 years, you know, roughly 30 years.
It was one of the last films he did.
Yeah. So we're looking at 30-some years. And then I really got into Michael Jackson in my, right around like, 8, 9, 10, that whole era.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, because they used to run that, they used to run a lot of marathons of Michael Jackson back then. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember that, but like.
Oh, I remember.
They would show the full Thriller. They would show the Moonwalker short film, that stuff. So I was constantly seeing the full, I Was a Teenage Werewolf ripoff of Thriller video.
Yes.
Which, hey, no problems with that at all.
Yeah.
It went from that to zombies. And I'm like, cool. I love Michael Landon's I Was a Teenage Werewolf, and I love zombies. So we're good.
It's genius.
You know, but yeah, so that was actually the third thing that, and then obviously down the rabbit hole as I got older.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think everyone on this panel probably went through a Vincent Price rabbit hole at some point in their life where just, what else? Give me. And then I went, and then I found Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Girls and the Bikini Machine and.
And the man who confuses his surf music with dueling banjos, Mike the Hobbit Bickett here.
When you're hanging by the lake, it could be either one.
it's true that it's a very fine line. Yeah,
For Vincent Price, I want to say probably House on Haunted Hill was one of the first introductions that I had.
Nice.
There was, I've spoken, I think probably every Halloween season I mentioned that grew up without cable, didn't have a lot of opportunity to watch a lot of the scarier stuff, but my mom had this idea that if it was in black and white, it was safe.
Safe.
So I'd go to the library, and that's how I discovered like Night of the Living Dead and like all these classic movies. And House on a Hill was definitely in that list of movies where, man, that moment that the lights turn off and turn on, and there's the witch woman like in
the housekeeper
gets wheeled out, and it's the cheesiest shit you've ever seen. That and then the skeleton that's walking, that Vincent
William
Price's
Castle.
Controller. Oh my god,
beautiful.
It's so fun.
I actually saw this film after seeing Evil Dead, and I'm like, oh, this is inspiration for Sam Raimi. Because that housekeeper, when she floats, that is like a Raimi thing.
Yeah.
But
definitely.
You could just totally see where Raimi got some of his inspiration from going into the,
100%. Yeah. Like, and especially like the filming styles and the frugality and the promotion style of both, I would say both Castle and Corman, which, you know, Vincent Price worked with both of them.
Yes.
I think my first exposure, like we were talking about outside, was definitely like, seeing Edward Scissorhands and being like, I really like this dude's voice. You know, he clearly is being treated like he's someone special. Who the fuck is this dude? And then, you know, recognized his voice from Thriller and a ton of the other metal songs that I listened to. And then my mom and dad, I realized, kept quoting The Fly and going, help me, help me. And I was like, what are y'all doing?
The Fly was so good.
And so they were just like, oh, we'll show you.
But speaking of on Edward Scissorhands specifically, the time period when that came out, right, you know, we were all young, but these were also, we also had young cast and we had a young aspiring writer-director in Tim Burton. Imagine what it was like for them to get fucking Vincent Price. A, Tim Burton as the film, as the creator, like, I've got this motherfucker in my film. And then Johnny Depp, who had only done, what, like 3 movies prior to that?
Oh, yeah.
And that weren't big. And like, I actually have a scene, 2 scenes with Vincent Price. Like, I couldn't even imagine
let's get
how
the
that
kid from Jump Street.
Yeah. I couldn't even imagine how that feels. Right. Like, Vincent Price.
This is the second time that Burton had worked with Vincent Price, actually, because for his, like, one of his first shorts, he did the Vincent
short. Yes. Yeah.
Where he got Vincent Price to narrate, because it's about a kid that wants to be just like Vincent Price.
He must
Price.
Have been so starstruck.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm thinking.
That was,
like,
that was a personal story that he was telling, because you know that Tim Burton, also something that he played with in Ed Wood, is that Ed Wood's relationship with Bela Lugosi was the same kind of relationship that he had with Vincent Price in his later years as well. There's this very, very clear parallel between the two.
Oh, yeah. So, minus the morphine addiction, thankfully.
Well,
But no, it's exactly like just that's, oh, man, that's just a thing that I,
You know, it is really fascinating how everything what we're talking about right now, how we're following the trail of, say, Vincent Price inspiring Tim Burton, inspiring the next generation. Mm-hmm. The way this the torch is passed is incredible, because you look at, gosh, it's almost hard to say where I'm going with this, but it's just exciting to watch who's inspiring who. Because here I am as a filmmaker, deeply inspired by Tim Burton, always knowing about Vincent Price, but Vincent Price, when I was a kid, he was so much older at that point that, yeah, seeing him in Edward Scissorhands, it was nice to see him not as a scary person, but seeing him so differently, I'm like, wow, this is the same guy as from Thriller. So it's just fascinating to watch these transformations happen over time and watch how the inspiration gets passed along.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting how that inspiration hits at different points in our lives, especially now versus when we were growing up. And we're of the generation that we're kind of in that like Xennial range of like later Gen X or early millennial range. So for a lot of us, I know this is true for me, I didn't look at horror. I found horror as a genre and I loved it. And so I was getting everything from Scream to Nosferatu thrown at me at the same time, and I was like just gobbling all of it up at the same time. So I was getting Vincent Price and slasher films from the 80s and you know, modern slasher, like slasher meta movies and everything all at once. And I had to do the thing where you're watching a movie and then finding out where the inspiration came from and then watching those movies and working your way back and finding even more. Kids nowadays are being assaulted with so much content all the time that it's almost more difficult to find the roots of what you like, because here's another shiny thing. Like, there's constantly new content in your face all the time, that finding those back roads to the origins of inspiration is way more difficult for kids nowadays than it was for us.
So, just respond to that real fast. You know, I think that we are seeing a rise in, like, I guess I'll call them like homage movies, where they have tons of Easter eggs, and they're like, there are definitely things that you can trace back to specific films. Like if you've already viewed those things, or as you're viewing, you know, older films, you're like, I get what they were doing now. But, you know, we've always had stuff like that, especially with things like, I'll just say like The Simpsons and Futurama for one, because those are two.
Simpsons always.
Treehouse
of Horror.
Yes. But those Easter eggs and those things that are beloved will always be included, and sometimes they'll be more heavily included, and like almost like not to the point of montage, but you know, it's one of those things. But one of the things that I really found interesting recently, and another podcast I was listening to brought it up as well, so I know that I know that I'm not crazy, but like the parallels between the way that Vincent Price's character orchestrated things in the Dr. Fives movies compared to how the Saw movies orchestrated things. And while we don't dip into torture porn with Dr. Fives, we get all of these machinations and people being punished for other sins and like chances to atone, but like prices have to be paid and things like that. And, you know, all of this while, you know, we're like, Dr. Fives is clearly in the wrong because he's murdering people, you know, from a, like a sheer morality stance, like you shouldn't murder people, kids. But also like I wanted him to win. I wanted him to win in both of those movies, even though he's like trapping people and fun, like being like, so you've got X amount of time till this acid destroys their face. Best of luck. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I would even go as far to say that there are some elements of the Mask of Red Death in the movie Doomsday. Because it's talking about like a massive plague, and then there's like almost like what's happening within the castle is more dangerous than what's happening like in the plague world. Like there is some, it's not the same story, it's not a remake or anything, but there are like little like dabblings of within both.
Well, I mean that the exponential, reverberations of the beginning of Poe, and then especially like the Poe-Corman cycle, of which Price was such a major component.
Huge.
Of so many of those films. Those echoes, I can't even begin to start tracing all of the different things that those touch and affected, because I definitely think that like we wouldn't have like a lot of like what we're looking at as far as like Jeffrey Combs and things like that without that cycle.
Yep. Yeah. And it's still, it's a fun thing to acknowledge just how that's being passed along. And, you know, earlier when we were talking about how it's this new generation, it's kind of harder for them to find the origins of what they're really enjoying. Well, there was a time, like around this time with, say, Vincent Price and Boris Karloff and all of them, horror was just horror. Everything was kind of a gothic horror. Mm-hmm. And now we have all these different genres within horror that they had to have spinoffs, because Vincent Price was probably among the first to be an attractive villain. Yeah. And like, so you finally, you're starting to see him play villains that that we like this guy and we want to root for this guy. And that's something that, you know, you never really wanted to do prior to that.
Yeah.
And so now we have all these nice spinoffs. So now we've got our torture porn genre. We've got our gothic horror and our classic horror, which is where I think everybody kind of lumps Vincent Price these days, along with a lot of those older guys. We all think of them as the older guys.
To be fair, Vincent Price did play the Invisible Man, or the brother of the Invisible Man. I think Invisible Man Returns.
Yes, he did.
So, I mean, it's technically not like the first appearance of that character, but that's still, I mean, it's still early days.
True.
Yeah. Universal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, and then like after Thriller, so this is only like a year or two after that, I don't know if anybody remembers, sci-fi back in the day used to do a whole run through October, and each week would be a specific actor.
Oh,
like they would do a Peter Cushing week, or they would do a Christopher Lee week. And every year would rotate, right? They'd do a Bela Lugosi week. They had a Vincent Price week 1 year. And every night, I can't remember if it was one or two films, they would play one or two films from that specific actor. So when they had a Vincent Price, you know, week, I mean, that's when Murph, you and I were talking about the Tales of Terror. That's when I saw that. And Fibes and The Fly. That's when I saw all that. So that was, there was ways to get to realizing where everything came from back when we were younger. That's what I was trying to tie that together. Like, that was the 90s. Like, I was, you know, there's a lot of shitty ones in the early 90s, but I was, you know, really cut my teeth in horror on 80s slasher stuff. That's,
yes,
you know, that
same
was
here.
But then going back, and that, and my Uncle Bud had all the Universal Monster movies that he would lend me so I could watch. So like I had avenues, but outside of that, there was still stuff being broadcasted that was the old stuff. So you had avenues. I don't really know with the surplus and just the amount of stuff out there now, I don't know how they can find an avenue and just chop down through the weeds to get to find the sources and do that timeline back.
Cuts, yeah.
I mean, I think that's where podcasts and streaming services come in, because like
GUIPodcast.com.
should we rip off Expedia? GUIPodcast.com.
.com.
Oh my God, you guys are going to kill me. But like, I think so.
Oh no.
I'm going to bop my forehead into this microphone. but, you know, I feel like it's also worth pointing out that like the Vincent Price entering the horror world happened during that Universal cycle. Like, it still happened. So like, film debut in 1938, not a horror film. It was a Service Deluxe, and then
it was a porn, actually. I'm going to give you Service.
It was postcode, so it wasn't a very good horror.
Bad, actually.
I've never seen Service Deluxe, actually.
No, I was talking about my
Vincent Price.
That wasn't terrible, actually. Okay.
Yeah, I've heard worse.
Not terrible is about the best I can ever expect from one of my impressions, so I'll take it.
But I would definitely call, like, they talk about House of Wax being one of his first big horror films, which is
so good,
amazing,
so
and I love it.
Good.
But I feel like we're missing out on a chance to include, like, the first film that he was, like, given top billing on, which was Shock in 1946.
I've seen that.
And it's definitely more of, like,
it's like a thrillery,
it's
or pulp.
A little bit more like noir-y, Because a woman witnesses Vincent Price kill his wife, and it sends her into
with
like
mustache,
catatonic shock.
rips it off
and beats her in the head with it. Yeah, it was really.
I use this as a whip.
You lost it.
Wait, rips off the mustache and beats his wife with the mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, it just he hit her in the head, so instead of getting off, she died.
Well, let's see. I don't have a whip around me.
No, but I tried.
I shouldn't have said anything.
I should have left it alone.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said anything, and then it'd still be good.
Cool. Your fault. Anyway.
Exactly.
So later on, we have to do I'll do our Vincent Price impression.
No.
No. I'm with Fabian. No.
I've got one. It's just bad,
and I want to hear all of them. But she goes into catatonic shock, so they call the doctor, and he is the doctor they call, and he's like trying to treat her, and then realizes why she's in shock, and so then it's this back and forth play, of like, does he actually try to treat her, or does he try to like suppress this memory, or try to drive her insane? And his mistress, who he was leaving his wife for, is like trying to urge him to take like definitely not the best path, and so she's kind of like the femme fatale character. It's interesting. It's worth a watch.
It's basically Gone Girl. But with Vincent Price, no, I'm kidding.
But it's definitely something
Vincent
that...
Vincent Price gets pregnant, and it's a... No.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, what you bring up a good point.
And things like that.
What you're making me think is that, you know, it's just cool how Vincent Price went across so many genres. Because right now you're talking about the film noir and the thriller aspects of some of the work he did, as opposed to things like The Fly. Mm-hmm. Which is, I'd look at that as a science fiction, a science fiction horror.
Well, OG being Frankenstein. That was, I think, consider the OG sci-fi horror.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, Mary Shelley was oftentimes mentioned as like the beginning of sci-fi.
Yes,
really.
Yeah. And she was a genius. She was a genius to write.
Know
what
that.
She did.
Thank you for saying that.
Oh yeah, well, yeah.
You know, most people, there were a lot of males named Mary back then, so people.
You think, of course, you think a bunch of men that were walking around.
No, it was H.G. Wells. Fuck off.
But this cross genre talent that he had, and he was perfect in every single one of these roles.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just so he was very impressive. But then going back to the genre itself, watching the evolution of horror is just an exciting thing. And when I think about that, like. When you watch how one genre feeds into another, like correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure I at least heard this. If the movie The Tingler, before Alice in Wonderland, with Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. So The Tingler was like the introduction of color. In film, wasn't it?
No, The Wizard of Oz is the introduction. It was the first Technicolor film. The Tingler, we did see the return of... No, that was 13 Ghosts. Sorry, I fucked that up. I was thinking about Margaret Hamilton. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. Because I might be wrong, but I feel like...
The Tingler used the William Castle gimmick of, it was Electro, which the buzzers under the seats.
Under the seats, but parts of the movie were in color.
I don't remember.
Wasn't
it being
there
in
like
color.
The movie was black and white, and there were parts of the Tingler that, the blood was in color.
I've never seen The Tingler.
You are correct. The blood, it was a black and white movie, but the bloody bathtub scene in The Tingler was filmed in black and white, but a short color sequence was spliced into the film.
That was the introduction of color to film. And so, of course, so for them to do that before Wizard of Oz,
nope,
I mean, that is...
That's post-Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz is like 30s.
Okay, well, pretend I didn't even bring up Wizard of Oz because none of that happened. The Tingler was... Okay, no. The reason I brought up the Tingler is because I like LSD. And I thought that the LSD scene in there was incredible. Vincent Price doing LSD in the Tingler.
Oh my God, yeah.
That was grade A... anybody who's seen The Tingler knows that if you're
so
having...
You recommend The Tingler is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was just a good time.
Especially
watching him...
watching with friends.
The horror. And then collapsing the way he did.
The Tingler...
Is it about a bug?
The big difference is that in The Tingler, there is a black and white scene with a color element.
Yes.
Very much in like... I hate to use Schindler's as an example, but where there's just the red coat in a black and white sequence.
Yeah.
That's a little different than Wizard of Oz, where there was slightly that in the in-between, but then it was all color.
Yeah.
You know, it had that hard turn, whereas this had a black and white scene with color elements included. So it is a slightly different use.
Well, I mean, I feel like I've seen like clips from this movie, because that picture of Vincent Price with this weird thing on his chest.
That's the Tingler. This creature called the Tingler grows on the spine of every human, and the way that you kill it and you get it to shrink back down is by screaming, and it happens when you're scared. So,
my God.
And so normally people are safe from this creature, but if someone was, say, like, mute and didn't have vocal cords and couldn't scream, the Tingler could kill them and escape, which is what happens. And that's where we get
you mutes. Like, that's
And you know, on top of it, you know, people are creeped out by parasites.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Tingler was this overly creepy creature that would grow inside your body, rip out, and then it would crawl through the movie theater, and they would show it in the movie theater. And it was, and then in the movie theater, they would shake your seat. And the creature was underneath you, and so it would make people scream their heads off.
Yeah.
So I wonder, and I'm sure it is, but I love how we're, you know, it's utilizing Vincent Price, but also talking about the inspirations moving forward. I wonder if this was like an inspiration for Shivers from Cronenberg.
There's a lot of possibilities.
Could have easily been.
Yeah. Very much.
Easily. I mean, easily.
You know?
That one's more sexuality driven.
Well,
that's
Cronenberg.
No.
You know, that's part of the evolution. Everybody gets what the previous generation did, and then they add their own thing. Cronenberg made things sexual. Clive Barker made things
really
awesome. And you know, everybody comes along and they take what came before them, and then they spice it up with their own personality.
Yeah, exactly. Cronenberg's like, ooh, I love the like weird like 60s, late 50s, 60s, like buzzer button kind of movies and all that. That's great. But what if we include that into what it's like to fuck a sunburn? Like, if we could include those things together, then
Well, it also these movies, also the William Castle movies that he was in, especially had a huge effect on John Waters too.
Oh yeah,
so you know, this is like a transgender.
I mean,
thing.
Just mustache alone.
John Waters' mustache is much slimmer.
Much slimmer, for sure.
He's got the pencil.
But the inspiration. There's even stuff that you don't think about that I remember this. I don't know why it's in my brain, but the voice, the hear me. From the fly. That is how you got Howie Mandel doing Bobby's World.
Yes.
He was doing he used to do an impression of the fly in a stand-up set, and then he was approached about doing some kind of like cartoon or something, and so he came up with Bobby Jenerick from doing
that's
his fly impression.
Really fucking cool.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that is. That, yeah. That's
fucking really cool.
Because I watched the shit out of Bobby's World when I was younger.
Yeah.
So
we all did.
That was...
An elephant never forgets a friend.
Yeah. But you know, that's all these movies touch us all. Everybody is watching the same movies. You would think that, I think that's one of the things that separates low budget independent horror out from. There are some movies that go way under the radar, and then there are the ones that, say, Vincent Price was in that we all saw. Everybody saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's imitating them. So in the case of something like Bobby's World, you're a little kid, you're watching this thing, you have no idea that this was a character inspired by something Vincent Price
did.
Yeah.
So rather than being like low budget, you'd say like these films became accessible.
Yes.
Like these are something that became
more accessible.
A lot of them were low budget, but they were still making a huge name for themselves. And the truth is, when you're doing horror, you don't need a high budget.
Right.
You can do something with a really low budget, and as long as it's memorable, like look at Evil Dead, ultra low budget, and yet hugely successful, and everybody knows it.
And but, again, the Corman stuff.
Also thinking about the time, you're talking the 1950s and 60s, this is well before people even had like reels in their house. There was no way to take the film home with you really at this point, so these movie houses would have just runs of movies for years. Like if House on Haunted Hill, I don't have any facts about that specifically, but would run through picture houses for like a decade of being in and out during Halloween season, come back through, because that was the only way you were going to see it. There was no other way to watch this movie. So the longevity there, that's why they pumped out these movies, and that's why they were successful, because literally people just wanted more content. There wasn't enough films being made. So the shelf life of these things were insane.
Yeah.
So everybody got a chance over a period of 5-10 years to see this movie.
So that's another difference we've got. The shelf life isn't there.
No.
Like talking about.
Not,
Well, we also don't have as many directors that four-wall theaters these days that they did like they did in these, where they would basically take their film from town to town. Like Kevin Smith has been doing that a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you go and like they would go and they promote and they would, you know, basically like buy out, rent out the theater to show their film and do it that way. Be like, okay, you're not going to distribute my film? I'll fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You know, like we also, I know that I've watched this, but I don't have a ton of memories from it. But he was also in like the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And
wow,
in the
he
middle
was,
of
yeah.
all of these, you know, and, yeah. and obviously like my biggest connection to Vincent Price has been the horror movies. But I definitely think that it's worth mentioning that like when he was first cast, like his first entree, I guess, if you wish to say it that way, to like the theater realm of being like a leading man was in Victoria, Regina, and on the theater, at the Gate Theater, and he was, you know, looked at when he was going to start doing like more theater and movies as a potential romantic lead because he was 6'4", he was handsome, and one of the things I watched definitely made a comment about him being 6'4" with long legs doing these like Renaissance plays with in tights and a codpiece and how it didn't hurt box office.
And he does have those dreamy blue eyes.
He does.
And let's be and that's also
right. Starting in black and white and then they go to color and like, oh, better.
Yeah.
It's like there were a lot of those lead men back mm-hmm. then, like they weren't 6'4".
No, they, Vincent was.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like that made yeah. him stand out even more. Is like there were not a lot of 6'4" actors.
Yeah,
like,
no, 100%.
You know, and then you add everything. Like you said you add everything else that he had.
And the thing about Vincent Price, he was. I noticed this watching his movies when he's not playing a villain. He comes across as such a sweet man. Like for example, when you watch The Fly.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a horror movie, but he's not the bad guy in that movie.
Yeah.
No,
he's not a scary element. So he's just this guy. First of all, the first thing I noticed about that movie is that this woman kills his brother and he's really supportive of her. And like he goes over to the house and he goes, oh, but I love my sister-in-law and I love my brother, and she killed him. I don't understand how this could be. Are you okay? I'm like, well, fuck you. You killed my brother. So, but yeah, so he comes across as so sweet, and he has that smile, and he's got a very sweet face and a very sweet approach mm-hmm. to people. And the way he speaks,
yeah,
he's just very approachable.
Well, and I do want to approach that on our second half. We're right at the break here.
Mm-hmm.
About kind of the nature of his character, like as a person, that he held himself very, very softly, and he wasn't an angry screamer type villain. He
no,
was
he's a warm
he
person.
Was warm, and he spoke softly,
yeah,
and he spoke with intention. And there was something about that that, as we go into like the 70s and 80s, where it was mm-hmm. a much more visceral, hard kind of approach to the villains.
Mm-hmm.
He still made it through that era, and he made it out on the other side into like the early 90s until he passed, that he was still, he never had to compromise his approach to that kind of role. And that's something super interesting. And also talking about it, like his sexuality that came out in
recently,
the past few years from his daughter's book. And
mm-hmm.
I want to get into that on the second half, but let's take a break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what we're drinking, some sponsor stuff, and get back into Vincent Price. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there's another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F.U. Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
We're back for the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, all things Vincent Price. I don't know what voice I was trying to do there. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about the spookiness that is capitalism. Yes, our sponsors. talking about our sponsors, of course, first off is Amazon.com. It is the beginning of October, which means you are not done with your Halloween decorations just yet. You're going to be costumes. Adding things and your costumes throughout the season. And those last minute needs, you're probably going to jump on Amazon.com to get because it's less complicated that way. And you hate to go to a store just to find out they're out of the thing that you need. And Amazon.com sometimes is the necessary evil to get the needs that you have for the Halloween season. Just make sure you go through the link at GUIpodcast.com so you can give us a little bit of credit for all the purchases that you're making. You're spending the same amount. We're getting some of the money from what you're spending. Allows us to buy candy for children. That's, think of the children.
You mean you. You're a man child.
I am. Some of the candy is for me, but
Steven, I am also one of these children. Yes. So you be nice.
By the children, I mean our panelists.
Yeah,
and I will eat some candy, especially this chocolate.
But I need
and
to stock up now because I want to get the good candy. I want to be the house. I like being the house that because I remember those houses when I was a kid. Like, no, I'm going here.
The full bar house.
Yeah. I like giving. I want to give good candy, man, because there was not enough houses giving good candy when we were kids, man. Mm-hmm. There was a cheap dollar store.
I just want to go to Costco and just high five everybody that's picking up the flats of Butterfingers and like Milky Ways and stuff, and just like.
Where's
give
the
them...
love for the fucking Reese's?
Yes. Oh, Reese's.
No, the Reese's. Reese's, man.
God, dude. Got to do Reese's. Like,
the Reese's.
Thank you, Jesus.
The Reese's.
Thank you, Reese's.
The Reese's technology that kids have today is not the same as my. Back in my day, we had Reese's. And then we had like dark chocolate Reese's, and I think that was like it. Uh-huh. Maybe pumpkin shapes.
They started the pumpkin shapes.
Did they do the pumpkin shapes and the like Christmas shapes?
Then we got
Shake
Five.
Now,
we got fucking.
Now there's
the
like
fast
the
break.
There's the Reese bars. There's the Reese like Kit Kat Reese.
They're
type
so
things.
Good.
There's so many.
Everything Reese's is delicious.
Right. Because there's not like a convenience store on my way.
Yeah, home. I'm now thinking I'm gonna go by 7-Eleven on my way home now just because of this little blurb. I'll order my Reese's on Amazon.
There we go.
Now I do want to say, as one of the hosts of From the Mouths of Madness, you can also order all the spooky movies that you don't have hard copies of on Amazon.com
Absolutely.
Through our link.
That is,
and
true.
There are. Literally everything.
Yep.
It's
up,
true.
In the right hand corner of the main page, GUIpodcast.com, and I'll send you right there. Now, another way to celebrate the season and also celebrate our bank accounts by putting money into it is to go to TeePublic and go to our store and pick any of the over 50 designs that we have available
at
our store.
You added two new ones?
We've got one new one. No, there's two more that I'm going to be adding before this episode drops.
Okay.
I've got a new spooky season shirt, and I'm working on a secret project that I don't want to say in case it doesn't end up looking good and I don't put it out. But yeah, there's another one that's in the process right now.
Nice.
Well. Excellent. Looking forward to seeing.
But yeah, we've got all of our seasonal Halloween designs that we pull out after the Halloween season. Pull out after the Halloween season are now back in the store. So get your alcohol Halloween shirts. Get all your spooky needs.
Your beep it bop it Hellraiser shirt.
Oh, the Hellraiser bop it.
Bop it shirt, yeah. That was a fun one.
Twist it, turn it, bop it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
puzzle box. Yeah,
yeah, that was that's a fun one. I think it's cute.
We've got a ton of very cool designs available from our stores. So
the Ouija board one.
The Ouija board.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's one of my personal favorites, as well as of course the classic GUI Cthulhu. design.
Nice. That was the first shirt I ever bought for
that
you
was
guys.
That's a great design.
Oh, wait. Have you guys had come up with your own gear yet?
No, not yet. Well, we did actually. Years ago, we did a collaboration with Three Notch of the East Coast local beer.
God, nice. That beer was so good. Really, they really nailed good. It out the fucking park, man.
I'd love to do a spooky season beer with somebody. Yeah. So any brewers listening, yeah. We're open to collaboration.
Coming up with our own
like
fall beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nice.
Although it would be very similar minus like the nutmeg, feel like for the Christmas.
Do a gooey Toberfest.
Yeah, dude, our own gooey Oktoberfest. Yeah.
Do a GUI Marzen style.
Marzen. That would be awesome.
Anyway, TeePublic, GUIPodcast.com/store. That'll send you right to the TeePublic store. Or just search Geeks Under the Influence on TeePublic to take you there. And tons of designs. Check it out. If it's not on sale, it will be on sale soon. They're on sale every other week, so check that out. Keep an eye out for new designs. And that's our sponsors. Now on to the real fuel that motivates us to do this, the juice in our tanks. We're talking about what we're drinking.
There you go. If only Smash knew all the ways he's being abused.
I thought I could be cool.
I promised myself I wouldn't cry.
No, seriously, if only Kyle knew the ways that he was...
That was fun for
That's
me.
It's a multi-purpose song.
All right, so what we're drinking, we have a lot of choices here, actually. We've got some good shit. Lowdown, if you want to kind of lead the charge here, what are we sipping on?
I brought the, as always, you know I do, I keep it East Coast local. Rarely East Coast local. This is like 10 miles away. We got Midnight Brewery out of Oilville, Virginia, which Oilville, folks, is like literally 10 to 12 miles outside of Richmond. This is their Mitternach, or Oktoberfest, and I have been... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it is Oilville, but it's in Goochland County.
Goochland County, yeah.
I've been I always wait up for this beer every year. It's one of my favorite local Oktoberfests. And I just wanted to bring it on the panel and share.
It's got a deeper profile than a lot of Oktoberfests. It's got a lot more of that malty kind of flavor.
That's what I want in my Oktoberfest. I want that malt in my mouth.
It's very smooth.
Malt mouth.
Malt mouth, yeah.
That sounds like a villain idea.
Malt mouth.
Well, who is that?
It's malt
mouth. A lot of the Marzens and stuff, you're getting that kind of like caramelization kind of flavor, which is present here, but you're getting more of those like kind of bitter chocolate notes. Mm-hmm. That you get with a higher roast profile on the beers with this one, which that's not a complaint. I love that profile.
That is what I look for in Oktoberfest. Is I want that roastier flavor. I want the dark chocolate, that bitterness, but because it's just the hint of that bitterness part, because the bitterness goes away because the sweetness from the roasted malts comes back in and cancels it out. So. They do a really great job with this, and I saw them post stuff like a month ago about it, and I think it was just at the brewery. They didn't actually, I think, start distributing it until like a week ago, and I'm like, yeah.
Nice.
Get a couple of these four packs.
And what's that ABV on that?
This one isn't relatively bad. It's a standard Oktoberfest, 5.5%.
Okay, great.
I mean, most Oktoberfests, the highest I've ever seen is like 6.5%.
Yeah, that's pretty standard.
They're not crazy, so.
The other one that it's going to be a clusterfuck of different ones, because I did a variety pack, because we're talking Vincent Price. You want spooky and you want a lot of different kinds of choices there, because he's so prolific. Mm-hmm. So it's a four pack, all from Adroit Theory. We've talked about it on the show before. Adroit Theory is like a heavy metal brewery out of, I think, Purcellville, Virginia.
It's East Coast local.
East Coast local shit. Yeah. And it's a very cool brewery. It looks like a new-ish warehouse district that people, like rich people, would park their boats. It's just this nondescript warehouses, and then you pull in and you walk in, and then it's just like blasting metal and like manifestos on the wall, and everybody wearing the like GI caps with the like black armband tattoos and talking about like fucking Slayer and shit and drinking really good beer. So it's a great time, and the staff there is absolutely rad. And their beer is incredible. Like, I don't think I've had something from Imagerite that I didn't at least appreciate.
So you're saying that I would fit in.
Yes, in your obituary shirt, yes.
I'm wearing camo shorts and an obituary shirt. I feel like I'm like, who dis?
You're wearing, I think we would all fit in.
You're wearing really, the uniform fair. Right now, yeah.
No, but I mean, I just
you're
think,
in uniform right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You'd be, I think I'm in uniform.
You'd be confused for somebody working there, I think, when you walk in. Excuse me, can I get some more of the... Just a customer.
No, I'm just drinking.
Yeah.
Just drinking.
But yeah, we've got four different, I think they're all IPAs. They're all, I think, hazy IPAs as well, the four pack. I've got a hazy Imperial India Pale Ale by the name of Memories Change Their Shape. And yeah, I believe all of these have more of that floral, fruity approach profile that is more my speed on IPAs. So this, yeah. this is tasty.
I also have a hazy Imperial IPA, and I believe it's either that's EOC or it's EBK. Okay, it's EBK, and this is just fucking delicious. Yes.
These are good. I'm loving this.
I've got Auto Immolation, which is also a hazy Imperial India Pale Ale. And by the way, just in case you're worried about like what you might pair these with, they list suggestions for food, cheese, cigars, and music on the side.
I will say I might have had multiple Adroids where I have paired it with the cheese and cigar. Because like I have a fairly good cigar selection, and multiple times I've seen my cigars I have listed here, and I'm like, sweet, know what
great.
I'm doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, love, like, great. How fun a work meeting is that? You work at a brewery, which, A, already rad as shit. But then secondary is like, all right, we've got to eat a bunch of food and cheese and smoke a bunch of cigars and figure out which goes best.
Yeah.
And blast a bunch of metal.
Yeah.
And figure out what goes well with
what. I wouldn't be mad at that at all.
Not at all.
No.
Wow.
No. So you have the black IPA, right, Fabian?
Oh, yes, I do. Whoa. What's funny is, I'm sorry. We're over here taste testing, and I just had an amazing taste of Invisible Art, the Black India Pale Ale, and this is delicious.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You guys.
I'm interested.
I thought I tried them all before we went on live, and
thank you.
I missed this one, and this one, that knocks my hat off.
I really like a good like black IPA. That is definitely in my preferred method of IPA.
Holy fuck balls!
Yeah, right? That's a lot of taste. Right.
Wow.
This is delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Oh,
and
my God.
I'm looking at these. These have great art. All of the bottles have a beautiful artwork on them. So
there's so much additional consideration with these beers of like
good.
Everything from the pairings to having really cool labels.
Yeah.
Very cool names for this. I mean, this is a well curated.
This is a thought through concept.
The concept is very well thought through. It's very cohesive with the other beers in their selections. And also, I don't think I've had a beer from here that I didn't at least appreciate it. I've had beers that weren't my thing specifically, but I can understand why they were good for other people's tastes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, and that's few and far between, most of them I was like, yeah, no, fuck, I'll drink the shit out of this. Even they have barley wines there that are like dangerous as fuck because they're like 15 or 16%. They're
and
like
normally
monsters.
Barley wines have a stank on them that lets you know like, no, this is like high ABV, but you're telling me it's smooth.
I mean, it's a lot of flavor, a whole lot of flavor, but fuck, it's very tasty.
Yeah,
and you know they pair well with each other. Also, I just had a sip of the Invisible Art, and it was full of taste, and I felt like I was eating a meal. Like it's delicious. And then because I'm sampling here, I had a taste of the Auto Immolation, and it was like, ooh, that was a good chaser. Actually, because it's kind of fruity and it's really light.
Not true. Yeah, because
the Invisible is very robust.
Dark, yes.
And like it's very, it's like almost
if,
like
if you
coffee.
Like dark coffee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, very dark coffee notes to
that's
it.
That's fucking good though.
It's so fucking good.
Oh, wow. Man.
Oh, okay. So Adric
good
Theory,
booze.
Always
good
already
tonight.
Been a fan, but like this just reinforces.
Yes.
That, yeah, it's such a cool brewery. Definitely check them out.
It says Vint Hill, Virginia.
So what we're saying,
I mean, it's probably in that region.
Is that you brought us a beer from a brewery that's as multifaceted and talented as Vincent Price?
Yes!
Okay.
Yes, that's actually...
You tied it in.
Well done. Speaking of, I did want to get into on the second half here with Vincent Price, the conversation about how he was of the era where There wasn't a lot of discussion about your personal life and what it included, and mm-hmm. your sexuality, your identity, and what that was like. And that recently came out in a great way from mm-hmm. a book written by his daughter,
mm-hmm. Victoria Price.
Victoria Price.
Well, she tried to get an interview early on with.
Yeah, I need to swing back around to that again, because she actually did a speaking engagement in Richmond a few years back, and we were talking with her about mm-hmm. Coming on the show. And just time didn't allow for it. Mm-hmm. So, but she was lovely to chat with via email. And so, yeah, I definitely need to check on that. So,
no.
Yeah, no, I loved listening to her talk about her father and the love that she has for him. And like some of the stuff that I was reading denotes that, like, he first shared his experiences with other men with her, like relating to her when she came out to him as a lesbian. Which I think is really wonderful for, you know, to meet this person that you love with fear that you might be rejected. And
like, you like vaginas? I like dick. Cool.
But the other thing that I love about Vincent Price and about the things that she has included about her father is she has included information about him from his whole life and the learning curve of him unlearning things and adjusting his viewpoints accordingly. Because, like, she talked about how, like, you know, when he was young and traveling Europe and saw all the problems, like, at first he thought that, like, Hitler might be a good thing. And then when he saw what happened, he was like, fuck all that, and swung aggressively liberally to the point where he was graylisted during the McCarthy era. And so she was like, and I don't talk about that part of my father's history to, you know, slander him. I talk about it because it is important to show someone that someone like my father can grow and learn and change, and that these things need to be possible for everyone. And I thought that was a really lovely thing, because we're talking about an actor that, you know, spans genres, spans
decades.
Art forms,
fucking
spans
decades.
Decades, has worked with everyone from Orson Welles to Tim Burton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everyone in between. And that he spent his whole life always refining not just his palette, but learning about humans and learning about them through art. And I think that that's one of my favorite things about him.
I think that's absolutely 100% true. And you think about the different types of characters that Vincent Price played.
Mm-hmm.
He ran the gamut from truly demented, like mm-hmm. evil intended, like anti-society characters, to the other end of like wanting more from humanity and wanting to like show the, like even literally trying to put the goodness of humanity into inanimate objects in like, let's say Edward Scissorhands, that there was so many ways that he was communicating the conversation about what it is to be human, what the mm-hmm. human spirit entails in his stories and in the roles that he played. I think that's part of the reason why he was probably so drawn to those Edgar Allan Poe
mm-hmm.
stories, mm-hmm. because that's really what a lot of those stories are about. It's deconstructing the psyche of human, you know, experience in Poe. So,
well, not only that, but Poe is another author. Like, Price did love his country. Like, he considered himself violently American, and as such was a proponent of specifically
different
art.
If you call yourself violently American now, that's a total...
No, this is Price being interviewed as an 80-year-old man in, like, 90.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So to put that in context, but in the context that he is talking
Vincent Price
about
with a mustache being like, you would take my guns from my cold dead hands.
Actually, he'd be more like, you will take my Rembrandts from my cold dead hands, except that I've already donated a bunch of them to this school, and we're putting them on display to make them more accessible to other people.
You would take my Rembrandts from that school from my cold dead hands.
Yeah, like, I think that that's one of the really wonderful things about him, is that he was just like, no, we need to be talking about, you know, American art, things that are unseen, and specifically, like, Native American art. And, you know, I will go ahead and say that when you look this stuff up, they do call it American Indians because it's the fucking 50s and like that. But so just be
you
a heads
to make
up
allowances
that,
for time period
but,
communication.
But that was something like he was on those committees and like spent a lot of time, you know, talking about them and, you know, being a proponent of them. And he was also like one of the first people, like he brought Jackson Pollock's work onto the Johnny Carson show. And so he was the person that introduced Jackson Pollock's work to the Johnny Carson audience, which I think is super cool.
I hope the episode is that he comes on to Johnny Carson and is like, oh, horror extraordinaire, what kind of spooky goods do you have for us? Like, have you ever met a real vampire? He's like, cute Carson, I've got this Jackson Pollock painting that I want to pull out. He's just like, this was painted in 19, you know, just it really breaks down like the movements of the painting, yeah. And shit. And Carson's like, no, but vampire bats, actual vampires, like, and I'll bring out another artist now.
The bat has a detective story going back to Jackson Pollock. Wow.
All right. Now, you guys just said a lot of stuff to unpack. Now, and I'm being honest because I have not read his daughter's book. Mm-hmm. And so this is the first time I've heard. I went, you know, prior to tonight, I had just seen his movies. I knew he was an art connoisseur, but I had not heard about his daughter's book, mm-hmm. talking about his sexuality. So for me, mm-hmm. personally, but also for anybody listening that is not familiar with her book, can you tell me, talk some more about the sexuality and what he came out with?
I haven't read her book, but I've listened to some interviews with her and listened to and looked at like a bunch of different writings from her. And so like one of the first ones that emerged was her talking about how when she came out to him as a lesbian, you know, he was like, he shared some of his experiences with men. And then it's also her discussing like, you know, correspondences that she, you know, found after his passing and a whole bunch of other mm-hmm. things of like, you know, people that he interacted with.
Memories of her as a child that like, there was like this community kind of aspect to their home mm-hmm. where there was artists and creators yeah. that were always around. And like her father sometimes had like a male friend that was, they were very close.
And, I see.
And there was a fluidity there with just even the way that they like approached it. Maybe not with any overt language.
Okay.
But there's always just this understanding.
Now, that's fascinating right. to me because I know that, you know, you just said the thing about how, you know, how he was older. And then you look at the age where he grew up, mm-hmm. Where there's no easy language for talking about sexuality outside of heterosexuality.
Especially the language of the villain is the yeah. language of queer coding. Really.
Especially with James Whale, like, got ostracized from Hollywood. Well, not just the gay thing, but, like, also his political ideologies and stuff, too. But, like, he was ostracized from Hollywood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Vincent Price was in that circle.
Yes. Like, yes. So it, to have to hide yeah. in that way and to learn about this now is that's a massive social commentary that we yeah. need to acknowledge.
Yeah. And also I haven't delved into that and read interviews or watched interviews to that level. Like I did know that, it's been stated, it's come out that, you know, his wife was bisexual. Mm-hmm. But that's as far as I knew. It didn't delve into really Vincent's thing. But I mean, to be in a marriage with someone who is, you know, is.
Actually, the 40s have been like, like dicks. I like vaginas. Like, but also, yeah, no, also.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Let's just great. keep this great. To ourselves.
This so,
and have a little yeah, party.
Yeah. It was just yeah. in reading that to just hear about her and then not to hear about his, it was kind of weird because it's like if you enter into a marriage with someone, you think that there's going to be a similarity within that.
Yeah.
But I guess it just didn't come out at that point.
So one of the things that I'm noticing is that when he had the opportunity, unless he was specifically asked about things, he was far more apt to talk about, you know, art or cooking or things of that nature, because those were the topics that he loved and that he was really passionate about. And that, like, one of the things that, like, I see time and time again is that he really didn't do things halfway. Like, he... You know, and to the point where, you know, there are sometimes where he was asked to pull back on roles. But, you know, whether it was any of the relationships he was in, any of his marriages, and, you know, to the last marriage where, you know, it began as an affair, like, he fell in love and that was it. Like, they were just full force forward, like,
mm-hmm.
and they were, you know, a team united, but like...
Like a true bisexual.
Oh, yeah.
All the way in from get-go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I really like his approach to his daughter.
Yeah.
That when she said she was a lesbian, rather than You know, in America, I think we have a problem where people are afraid to talk to each other.
Yeah.
They don't listen to each other, and they judge very quickly. And his...
No.
Yes. You know, when you're dealing with your child, the ultimate thing, the best thing you could do is listen and just and be supportive. And if you have a similar experience, to just let them know right there. I think that's an amazing thing he did.
Yeah, no, that's really wonderful, and I'm a little envious of that. I never ended up getting the chance to come out to my father. I don't know how it would have gone. My mother has been wonderfully understanding, but, you know, I honestly, like, that's one of the things I have questions on, and I know that that terror of expressing something that feels, it feels like the most obvious secret in the world, you know? So I can only imagine, like, that the relief and the strengthened bond that she must have felt in those moments.
So he was really ahead of his time as a father figure. And in every way.
As a person, an evolving society where, you know, there's no more shadows. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, he was like, no,
I know exactly what you mean. One of the things that I appreciated about him is his attention and his joy of art and his wanting to share that with people, and how he saw it as a way of seeing. Like, he loved art because it's how people see. And so I could just imagine. Now, I was never an art history person or an art appreciation person, but if he had been my professor, college professor,
the world
stuff,
would have been the world would have benefited from
engagements. He used to do speaking engagements and would go and talk to different colleges and things.
So wait,
and that's
like, as we got John Waters here, we could have also gotten Vincent Price at one point.
Hello, class.
Oh, yeah, fuck. And
that would have been
That's how he ended up creating some of these like art foundations that like some ended up being named after him. But there's one I want to say in like. Oh, God, I'm going to misquote this. I know it. It's my brain says it's UCLA, but I might be wrong. But there was a school that he went and spoke at that had, like, very high Hispanic and Native American population. And, like, he was so struck by, like, their passion and, like, wanted to help them start, like, this foundation of arts. And so he began, like, donating things from his collection and all sorts of other stuff.
Is that where some of the Rembrandts went?
Yeah,
like, to that.
Yeah, that was.
That's. I mean.
Yeah,
Vincent Price being a collector, he had original Rembrandts, correct?
Yeah, that was actually one of the first things he purchased as a child. He saw a Rembrandt in a gallery window and was struck by it, and went in and spoke to, as a child. Went in and spoke to the gallery owner and the gallery owner, thankfully, instead of being like, "Get out of here, kid," understood that there was a passion brewing inside this person that he was speaking to, and negotiated a payment plan with young Vincent Price.
So instead of snubbing out a fire, he was like, no, all right, you want it.
Okay.
It's going to take some years, but...
Basically.
Here's a payment plan. And he did pay it off.
He did. He put $5 down in, like, what, 19... 20 something?
$5 is still a lot.
At some point in the 1900s.
Because that was the Great Depression.
It was early in the 1900s. And he paid it off bit by bit. And so the first piece of art that came into his collection was this Rembrandt.
Does it have original Rembrandts? And then not only that, but to realize the importance, because that story alone is why he probably donated them, was like he understands you can't snuff out the fire inside, right? Like, you've got to, like, hopefully him donating it and someone else will see it and it'll just
yes, maybe an inferno, right? But very exciting, not just the fire inside, but to be able to see other people's fires through their art. That just really
a language through
really
the, eyes.
The idea that that art could be a way of seeing through someone's eyes and to learn about that person, how they express themselves. And these are all things that he had a great appreciation for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just blows my mind that, you know, I recall times recently in the news where they were talking about cutting art programs from schools the money needs to go into math and math and reading and these things. But, you know, those things are important, but snuffing out that which makes us individuals.
I feel like I can pretty confidently say that without the arts, I'd be dead right now.
I think it's
more so than just understanding our individuality, but it's also understanding perspective in a way that we can appreciate another person's otherness in a positive fashion as opposed to something to be feared.
We can celebrate.
Yes. I mean, there's something human in the fundamental level of not wanting to or being threatened by something that you don't know. That's mm-hmm. the shadows outside of the bonfire in the caveman days, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the beauty of art. It explains how even with our fundamental differences, there's a commonness of our human experience that we all have. And to erase that, to take away art programs, music programs, ways that people express that perspective, you're taking away people's ability to empathize and find mm-hmm. perspective. And
right. Yes.
It's so dangerous to do that.
And that was really just such an something like that would be so antithesis to everything that Price, I'm going to say is, because like even thinking about him, knowing all the things I know now, because one of the other, like, I guess, semi-unusual jobs or things that I didn't know about him when I started doing a little bit of extra research is that one of the other positions he held is that he worked with Sears Roebuck to help people across America actually engage more in a relationship with art, like helped like bring thousands of different things into their collection to be sold as original artworks, as prints, all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. So he was like the spearhead of that. And it's definitely worth looking into because I had no idea. And I think that's super cool.
And you know what's fucking awesome is this still ties into the first half where we talked about everything that came after him and how everything's built mm-hmm. upon itself. What he was doing, he was building upon fucking 1400s Renaissance, fucking Da Vinci, Michelangelo.
Oh, yeah.
He was building upon that mentality of what art can do when we had to have a complete revamp, which was the Renaissance, is that transferred to different countries at different times, right?
Yes.
Spain went through it at a different time than, you know, Italy did and so on and so forth. But that he literally would, that's because I was thinking when that came up, is like, what was his, what was he trying to move forward into the future?
Yes.
And that's, it seems now more than ever, that's what he was trying to do. That's where his was, you know.
You hit on a huge point there, because art, I think the way he saw it, art, yes, it is a way to see and learn about other people, like the artists themselves, but it's also a way of capturing history.
Yeah.
Because when you have created a great piece of art, you're creating it in a specific political situation or a specific world mm-hmm. situation at a specific time. And so when you create art in that way, and he completely understood this, you are capturing moments in time and you're preserving them. So people who don't appreciate a certain art, an art form from, say, the 1700s, they'll look and they'll go, oh, that's, you know, I wish it was more this way or more that way. When the truth is, no, they captured it as it was meant to be during mm-hmm. the 1700s.
During that time. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Also, art, and this is something that Fabian, you know, I talked about before we started recording, is that history is perspective. Mm-hmm. It's usually written by the people that won a lot of the time. But
it's always written by the victor. It's always written by the victor.
But what isn't always written by the victor is art.
Yeah,
and there are so mm-hmm. many aspects of history that we see through the lens of the art that's being created at that time that has a different context from the history passages that we're reading from that time. We're seeing common folk and their reaction to things happening in that time, like how that develops in culture and art and the funnel of different, like the blending of cultures between two different groups. Like you see that progression historically through art in a way that you don't see necessarily in the history books.
Yes.
Well, that also even relates to, you know, because Price had such a varied and widespread career through, like, you know, I would say, like, the heyday and the golden age of Hollywood, the first 100 years of Hollywood, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same transitions in the language of horror, because, you know, the way that fear and the way that discussions are held through film was unique to each of those segments. And while they are, you know, some of them are muted by the Hays Code and some of the other, you know, blasphemous restrictions that, you know, damnable conservatives lent to artists' voices when they could control them.
This is making me think, and therefore it scares me.
But, you know, I'm just saying that, like, that horror in particular has always held varied and staunch reflections of the climate in which it's made, mm-hmm. and also contains echoes of the past and the future.
It's always been the ultimate outlet for what nobody wants to fucking talk about.
Yeah, because nobody wants to talk about.
That's what I love about horror, is that horror is, it gets a pass.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be shocking, and it's supposed to be painful, and it's supposed to be horror.
It should exist in the other.
You're allowed to say whatever you want in horror. And that's why we have so many varied
forms of
horror.
Yeah, but nowadays they're just making it political.
Yeah.
They're just making horror political nowadays.
Yeah. Oh. So you're saying that Witchfinder General that came out in 1968 about Matthew Hopkins is not political?
No, I know. Yeah. I know.
Oh, but you know what? Before they said it was political, horror has been political, but
we're talking as a whole.
Yes.
I feel like horror started in the 30s and everything that happened moving forward.
Before the 30s.
Oh, yeah. Well, the silent films in the 20s and the late teens. Yes.
Yes.
Gotta include those. Horror has always included Senior Chaney in his magnificent roles.
And the original Frankenstein monster, which was like a
1919,
something like that. Which is actually very fucking terrifying.
It is very terrifying. It's out now, right?
Like
you can watch it, you can find it on YouTube. It's like a 20 minute film.
Like,
horrifying.
It's not long.
What they had to use for effects and prosthetics was, oh God, it just looks, it's ghastly. But everything horror has been moving forward, it has always been the thing of the outlier. It is always, that's what its purpose is, in my mind, anyway. I could be wrong, but that is what is always meant to
me. It's always been honesty.
Honesty is the outlier. Yes. Nobody wants honesty. They say they do, but when they get it, they don't fucking like it. Exactly. Nobody wants honesty.
Okay, so before we end this episode, I have to ask this question. If you were introducing someone to Vincent Price...
No, I'm kidding.
I know, but I'm nosy, and that's why I'm bothering
you. This is what happens
you.
When there's too many hosts in the kitchen, is that... no, I'm kidding.
I'll shut the fuck up.
No, actually, this is making my job easier.
I don't think you could if you really wanted to, though.
I could.
No, you couldn't.
Are you love it so much. Me?
No, it's just you love it so much that you couldn't do it. It would just still come out.
It would just look like I was pouting. You guys would be really confused why the fuck I came over here to pout in the corner.
No, hey, look at your baby to explode. Like,
okay, but I want to hear what you were going to say.
I do want to hear. Yes.
Because you've got such a wide span of options, if you are going to introduce someone to Vincent Price where someone goes, wow, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a Vincent Price movie. Where should I start? What is the film that comes to mind first for you guys, or it can be one or two that popped into my brain.
And it's not one of the first ones that I discovered. It was actually, surprisingly, I didn't find out that this was a movie until I read the book that it was based on, which is one of my favorite horror stories of all time and has been monstrously influential on the on the horror community.
The
story from Richard Matheson and I Am Legend that Vincent Price was in The Last Man on Earth.
Yeah.
Which to this day is still the most faithful adaptation to the book that has come out. And we're talking about, like, Omega Man is based on that very loosely.
Let's not talk about the CGI vampires. I Am Legend is very loosely related to that as well. God.
But Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price,
so
and
good.
You can find the black original black and white and the colorized version they have as well now.
I prefer the black and white.
I do like that the early versions that I had before it got popularized were like bleached out as fuck, and it was really bad versions of it. And now you can find a really good, like clean black and white version of it that looks, you can see everybody.
And I'm not a huge, I'm not like, it's gotta be black and white. No, it's just like, that film in black and white just fits better than it does in color.
It's hitting so many marks that Vincent Price was good at, is there's a lot of narration.
Yes.
And his voice is fucking golden.
It's fucking butter, man.
And so much of that story is him narrating his experiences, but also you're getting to see some versatility in the character, is that he's breaking down over time and you're seeing how him being separated from society is affecting a person over time. So you're seeing not just the, like, the quaint, you know, very lovely to meet people, Vincent Price. You're seeing the, like, broken, like, beaten down character, and he's still able to do a great job portraying that. So you're seeing a lot more flexibility in his acting there than you do with some of his roles. And no fault of his, it's what the role provides.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and to answer your question, what I would introduce somebody to for Vincent Price, I'd say I would go with Edward Scissorhands.
That's a great
I would have to make that the in, because if you want to introduce somebody specifically to a horror movie, you don't, there are other horror movies to show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The horror has so many entries, but to introduce somebody to Vincent Price specifically, I wouldn't go with just a horror film. I would go with Edward Scissorhands, because you get to see his a depth and a love behind Vincent Price in that movie at how he creates Edward.
Yeah.
And it's so heartwarming, and yet the movie is so focused on otherness and the mystery and the weirdness of it all. Mm-hmm. I think it encompasses more of who Vincent Price was than, say, something like The Fly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're seeing something that has otherness, it has love, it has fright, it has many aspects of it. And so when you watch that movie, you get a sense more of who he was. Like, if you were to ask this question of me, how would I introduce somebody to Bela Lugosi?
Mm-hmm.
I would say watch Tim Burton's Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Because it's the same kind of thing. Because Ed Wood, like, you can watch an Ed Wood movie that had Bela Lugosi in it, but you won't learn about Bela Lugosi.
Right.
And you'll see kind of the filmmaking style of Ed Wood.
Mm.
But watching Tim Burton's Ed Wood, where somebody takes it and kind of gives you the cliff notes of everything and creates a perfect movie that tells the story.
That's the scene with the squid in that movie.
Oh, I know. It says it all.
It's
and actually, Edward Scissorhands actually does make a good point in the fact that, and I just thought of this, like, one of the reasons why Vincent Price might have was probably like agreeing to do this film, especially at his old age at the time when he did the film, was like the whole story is about just the accepting of the odd duckling, the outsider, and like Vincent Price, we talk about art and with his own personal life and what he's seen and how he was able to grow and change.
His whole personality.
Like it's like that's everything that he embodied throughout his life in his final film appearance.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And that's
and at that age, he did not want to be doing a bunch of violent movies. He wanted to do something that, you know, everybody could see.
I would say quick answer for mine, and it's one that hasn't come up yet, but I think that if you're just looking at intro to Vincent Price, and I'm coming from the dastardly villain aspect, I would actually, because if they haven't heard of Vincent Price yet, they're probably not big into horror. So I'm going to do an easy in. I would go with the Great Mouse Detective.
Oh,
he plays
Okay.
I hadn't even
because
thought of that.
Radigan. Wow.
Him as Radigan was such a dastardly motherfucker, man. Like, he was amazing for that. Like,
solid call.
And for a Holmes villain, like, go par with Sherlock Holmes, like, Vincent Price's the voice was brilliant. And that is perfect just to that level that, you know, Price could do.
On that same level, The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo is another great in for kids, too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he was Vincent Van Gool in that, but voiced it and obviously was Vincent Price.
Yeah.
So
I was just looking, I mean, even as an adult, like, say you have an into horror, like, I could be just assuming wrongly, but you're probably into Disney and stuff like that, and you grew up with that. So if you haven't seen that Disney film yet, at the point when you want to be introduced to Vincent Price, watch The Great Mouse, because that was 86. The Great Mouse Detective was 86. It was in that
really
weird era of Disney.
86.
It's a really
86
good.
86 was an excellent year for movies. We got Night of the Creeps. We got Aliens. We got everything great came out in 1986.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of good quality shit. And that was one of them. I still rewatch that film. I love him as Radigan.
That's a great movie.
You get full blown. He got to go balls to the wall as a villain in that one. he really did.
And he got a great song.
Yeah,
and
you got a great song.
Actually, to be fair, like, I didn't know that was Vincent Price when I saw Great Mouse Detective because I was a fucking child.
Yeah.
But, I saw that before any of the other Vincent Price shit. Mm-hmm. So, technically, that slides under my first experience with Vincent Price. Yeah. Great Mouse Detective.
I love that.
So,
I love that so much.
That's great. So,
Murph,
what do you got for yours?
Honestly, you know, I'm a fucking cheese ball and that I'm going to either show people House of Wax or I'm going to show them House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
And House of Wax is great because it's got such an amazing, monstrous reveal. And because you still see this, like, care and passion and devotion to his creations. And House on Haunted Hill, because I love the trickery of the false ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
I love the cheesy showmanship of William Castle. And I love that we see a wide range of Vincent Price. And not only that, but because both of those films experienced remakes later on, I think those are my toes.
I feel something.
This room is very cozy.
I think that those are great lead-ins because you can go, oh, so you love this film. Well, guess what? There were these other versions starring this incredible actor.
Yeah.
And so you should go back and take a look at where they drew their roots from, because both of the originals are solid.
Yeah.
You know, they're fun watches. You know, they may not scare a lot of present audiences with, apart from, like,
I don't think they need to modern day,
they don't,
really.
They don't
they're
need
fun.
To.
They're fun movies.
And the way that they crafted their horror was different.
Yeah.
And you know, and House on Haunted Hill especially ends with a strange ambiguousness of him waiting to be judged, you know, having escaped murder, but having technically committed murder himself. And, you know, and you see such a wide range of emotion from Price, and you can see exactly where he's charming, but he's suspicious, and he's someone that you want to empathize with, but you can't help but be suspicious of him. And I think that those are a lot of the aspects that I love of him. And also, you know, there's just, I love Vincent Price when he gets to be handsome and dastardly.
It's the best Price, you know. It really is the best Price.
It's the price only, we all think of.
Only film that I outright, like, loathed him. Like, he was amazing in it. Utterly amazing, but was Witchfinder General / The Conqueror.
Yeah.
But because he's portraying Matthew Hopkins, who is, you know, one of the serial killers that got paid for it.
Yeah.
I honestly, when I think of the twisting the mustache, I like, literally Vincent Price is.
Yeah, right.
I know he wasn't, like, some of the main people in that role, but, like, when he was that, it was like the ultimate. Like, just. Yeah, just him that being. Yeah.
All right. So we are at the tail end of this episode, and God, that was such a great second half. Really.
Oh, it really was.
Nailing some really, really important notes for Vincent Price. But we're going to ruin that by doing a little segment that we always close out with, making a drunken scene.
Oh, boy.
Making a drunken scene.
So this is gonna go a little bit different, partially for time, but also I just want to hear everybody's Vincent Price impressions.
You really don't want to hear
so
mine.
On the
you really don't
group chat for this episode, I posted 4 different Vincent Price lines.
Oh God.
For this and there's also screens, so if you're close to a screen you can read from the screen. But we've got Aramis from The Monster Club, which is something that we haven't talked about, which
oh,
is
that
just
movie was so much fun.
Super camp, post heyday Universal Monster, where just, like, people playing the Universal Monster showed up at the same place.
Also, amazing animation of a stripper stripping out of her skin and being a skeleton.
Why doesn't that ever happen?
I'd pay
dollars.
Lots of dollars.
That was literally a Robbie Williams music video that he got a lot of shit for back in, like, early 2000s, is that he was doing, like, a strip dance and then he just ripped his skin off.
That's amazing.
And people were like, oh, that's gross. And he's like, I thought it was fun, personally. That's he probably great. Watched Monster Club and he's like, hey,
I'm going to do that.
So we got Monster Club. We've got from House of Wax, Professor Henry Jarrett. We've got Frederick Loren.
I want to be Frederick Loren.
Okay. And then we've got the intro from Thriller.
I feel like
I'm going,
like,
to want to call Thriller.
I was going to say, I feel like that's Fabian
okay, so
all day.
Fabian's
like...
doing Thriller. Then we've got House on Haunted Hill with Murphy. And then I can do either House of Wax or Monster Club. If Lowdown, if you have a preference, I don't care. Either way.
I don't have a preference, honestly. That's fine.
I'll do House of Wax then.
Okay.
With my terrible fucking Vincent Price accent.
So are we all doing our best Price impressions for this?
Honestly, like, you can do whatever version you want. I'm gonna do Vincent Price poorly, and make a fool out of myself. You can, or
mine will
you don't
probably
have
be
to.
Worse. So I'm
gonna go in for Team Price in person.
All right, cool. Oh, let's just do fucking Vincent Price.
Jesus.
So this is starting off, baby, and I'm gonna send you.
I'm going first.
You're going first.
All right.
Trust me, that's probably the better move.
Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and do this.
Set the precedent. Set the precedent.
Hey,
baby.
I'm full of beer. So this is going to be extra special.
You're the opener, so you don't have any. If somebody, if Murphy ends up sounding exactly like Vincent Price, you don't get affected by it.
This is okay by me. The way I see it, the way
save it and tell everyone.
Vincent Price has that wonderful grimy kind of voice, and I now I'm in a metal band, so maybe that'll help me here. So I'm gonna try. Let me warm up. All right.
November 12th at Fallout.
All right. Oh boy. All right. I think I might be ready. Whoa, okay. Whoa. His voice is higher than this.
This is amazing on its own.
Oh wait, was that Arnold Schwarzenegger?
that was definitely Schwarzenegger.
All right,
that was like Total Recall Schwarzenegger.
Get to the hills.
All right.
Instead of run to the hills,
or get to the chopper.
All right, let's see what this is gonna sound like. Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The foulest stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mere mortal can resist the evil of the Thriller.
That was rad.
I gotta tell you, no, when I honestly, I've knowing this for so long, like when you got breathy on Stay Alive, I was like, oh no, that's actually, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's just me being out of breath because I'm so drunk.
No, you remember Price did that, and he added the fright to his Stay Alive. He added that
oh, yeah.
ooh to it.
That's awesome. Oh, that was awesome. That was really fucking good.
Why, thank you.
That might be, I don't know, I don't know.
I'm fine.
All right, Murphy, you're fucked now.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so enjoy that. Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting me go first. Pressure's off. I get to laugh at everybody.
There we go. Yeah. All right, so this is from the House on Haunted Hill. The thing that we share gifts on every time it's spooky season for our friends when we're hanging out is like, there might be ghosts and candy. Right.
I'm Frederick Lauren, and I have rented the House on Haunted Hill tonight so that my wife can give a party. She's so amusing. There'll be food and drink and ghosts and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited. If any of you will spend the next 12 hours in this house, I will give you each $10,000. Or your next of kin in case you don't survive. Ah, but here come our other guests.
Spooky!
Now that was sexy in a whole different way.
Yeah, that was
hot.
Yeah, that was just different.
That a little bit, again, growing up with like library is the thing.
Yeah.
I also listened to a bunch of like old 1930s radio horror and stuff. Like, and that had that like 30s radio kind of vibe to it. Fucking rad as shit.
I'm going to remember you can do that.
Thank you.
You're going to be coming over to my house to do some voiceover.
Hey, and just let me know when.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I'm House of Wax, so I'm next here. Professor Henry Jared. I'm afraid that the visit of such a distinguished critic may cause my children to become conceited. To you, they are wax, but to me, their creator. They live and they breathe.
Nice. Okay, that was so good.
Oh man, last.
I set the bar a little lower for you.
Thank you,
sir.
I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can get like high and nasally.
You, I don't see you as a high and nasally.
Yeah, but and it's not a negative to Vincent Price's voice, but he was definitely higher and nasally. I'm gonna do the best I can. I've actually never tried to mimic Vincent Price in my life, so we'll see how this goes.
Oh, we all have.
No, I honestly have not actually. Okay. Can we truly call this a monster club if we do not boast amongst our membership a single member of the human race?
Oh, good dig, Vincent Price. Who is the real monster but man? Yeah. Oh.
So I actually, in my head, like, I read through it prior, and I was like, no, there needs to be inflection here, because Vincent Price was like, can we truly call this? Yeah, because he would just add his own little oomph.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And I didn't do it.
So. But fantastic. Obviously, we have such a love and admiration for Vincent Price and the roles that he portrayed in film. Like, him as a person. And what he gave to not just the horror community, but I mean cinema and creators
stage.
In general.
Yes. Yeah, and stage. It's like everyone here loves Vincent Price to the point when they realized that he was a thing and something else. Like it was just it was like an explosion in your chest. Like
excitement.
Just, that's at least and actually the fact that the last thing we spoke of what I would bring for an intro was The Great Mouse Detective. Like that's how I felt when I realized that was Vincent Price. Like I was like, holy shit. Like it was just this explosion in my chest of joy that I was like, oh no. Yes, crossing genre lines, crossing boundaries. This is what this fucker did, man. Like you've got to nothing but love and admiration and respect and
people talk about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
I think we need to figure out the degrees of Vincent Price.
Oh,
truth,
yeah.
Because
truth,
he connected,
truth.
He so much spawned and blossomed from what he established and the movies he was involved in. He was deeply rooted in Hollywood history.
I would love to have an interview, because I have watched interviews with Kevin Bacon, but no one's ever asked him if he was inspired by Vincent Price.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I want to know these things.
That's
man.
Why I
like,
shouldn't have an interview show, because that would be just what I ask for every person that shows up on the show. I was like, were you inspired by Vincent Price? And I'm like, I'm a clown. I'm like, well, yeah.
No, but like, honestly, speaking with Kevin Bacon, Kevin Bacon has crossed over and done so many things. And regardless of what some of the a public opinion might be, I feel like he's done a good job with the majority of some of the stuff he's done, especially when he crossed in like The Following. Where there was a whole cult, and that was the whole thing.
Yeah, but I feel like that's a hard turn to be like, what's your main inspiration? And it was like, well, you know, for my my role in Super, I really pulled from Vincent Price for my character.
I'm not saying that everything he's ever done would be inspired by Price. I'm just saying that, like, as an actor,
he's of, like, the age, too, that he probably grew up watching.
That's what I'm saying. He might have
stuff,
grown up watching those things, and that's just, you know.
One of the things that I, like, I'm going to look for it, and I'm hoping that somewhere out there's a recording, but one of the things, apart from seeing Price speak at, you know, just about art and about the things he's passionate about, I learned that he had a one-man show about Oscar Wilde called Diversions and Delights.
Of course he did. That actually fully tracks,
sense.
Too. Yeah,
and
that makes
sense.
Super makes track.
Yeah,
makes
it
sense.
100% tracks. Reminds me of Jeffrey Combs' one-man show about Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm.
And also is just something that, like, I just wish that I could have seen.
Oh, yeah,
I bet
totally.
It was incredible.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
But on that note, thank you so much for listening to this episode about Vincent Price. This has been so much fun. What I love about this, we had some fun. We made some jokes. We had a good time talking about the stuff we love, but we also dug into kind of the nature of art and what it means to people and how Vincent Price interacted with that and, like, really celebrated art in many different facets and became like kind of a curator of it to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And that's incredible. And there's few actors that have been able to do that in their time. So big celebration and a cheers for Vincent Price.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to Vincent. So thank you for listening. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe, all the things you do for podcasts, do to us as well. Tell your friends and enjoy the rest of the Potterween season as it comes through. We'll find you next time for another episode of Geeks Under the Influence. I'm Mike the Hobbit.
I am Lowdown.
Join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
That was
terrible. I'm sorry.
Terrible.
I'm so sorry.
Join us or die. Join us or die. Or I will swallow your soul.
GUIPodcast.com.